Jack Jones believes a man's reach should always exceed his grasp.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to rise.
Have you noticed leaders in business are usually the leaders in all community activities? The National Automobile Dealers Association is proud that its members, new car dealers, fill leading roles in helping to beautify their city, putting a church building fund over the top, or promoting parks and playgrounds. America needs leaders, and NADA urges you to take the lead in your community. Pick an activity and go to work. Help yourself and your community. Monitor Outdoors, presented by Mercury Outboard Motors and Zebco Outdoor Sports Products.
This is Kurt Gowdy with a report for you anglers on the fine art of bait fishing. Even if you got a tackle box jammed with artificials, stick around. We'll be back in just a moment.
Fill her up, will you? Sure don't use as much gas as I used to, not since I bought this new Mercury outboard. This is a 95 horsepower Merc, but it goes farther on a tank of gas than my old 90. Mercury really builds an economical engine. It's got a small bore, short stroke design, and special combustion chambers. They sure squeeze the last mile out of a gallon of gas. Carburetors are preset at the factory for perfect air-fuel mixture. That's just two things Mercury does to save you money. Here's another way you save. Mercury's new Formula 50 oil. Mix it at 50 to 1, safely. It's been tested 3 million boat miles. No matter what kind of outboard you own, trade up to a 66 Mercury and save money. See your Mercury dealer.
Once again, Kurt Gowdy.
Remember the cartoon about the city fisherman's encounter with a barefoot country boy? The fisherman was dressed for the occasion and was outfitted with at least $500 worth of fishing tackle. He'd spent the day sloshing up and down the stream, drifting flies through the riffles, and all he had to show for his trouble was a sunburned nose. The kid, on the other hand, had only a hickory pole, a hook, and a bobber, and a can of worms sticking out of his pocket. But he still had a stringer full of big trout on the bank beside him. Now, is the story true or false? Is it actually possible for a youngster with a pole and line to outfish a grown man with all the fishing gear that money can buy? The answer is yes, absolutely yes. Knowing the water could have something to do with it, but the real key to the youngster's success was that can of worms. A good old-fashioned earthworm still tastes better than a piece of plastic, and most self-respecting fish are aware of this fact. Now, I'm not suggesting that all you fishermen unload your tackle boxes or stop patronizing your local tackle store for the latest in lures. But I do think that it's about time that we stop looking down our noses at bait fishermen and remember that the use of natural baits is a fine and revered art. To get the idea, impale a helgramite on a small hook and drift it down a riffle into a deep hole. If you do the job correctly, you'll be rewarded with an instant strike, a flurry of surface water, and the sight of a smallmouth or a trout leaping skyward. If you've been having trouble catching a limit of walleye or smallmouth bass, get a batch of crawdads, wait until dark, and fish these natural baits over a shallow mud bank or rocky bar. This fine bait can be a winner at most any time, but since they usually wait until dark to come out of their holes and forage around, this is the time when the big fish are waiting for a meal. Remember to fish these live baits naturally. When it rains, earthworms get washed down into little gullies into a lake or stream, and the fish are usually on hand for the feast. So take the hint. Fish your worms in such places when it's raining or the water is rising, and you just can't go wrong. Now, I'd rather catch a fish on a fly with a fly rod anytime. But out in Wyoming when I was a boy, before the streams cleared up in the spring, we used to have to use worms. But we'd fish the riffles and use worms with a fly rod and float them naturally through the riffles. It was a lot of fun. Frogs are fond of lily pads and grassy banks. Big woolly worms fall out of trees overhanging the water. Grasshoppers are most abundant in the pastures during the summer. Collect these baits, fish them at the proper places at times, and you'll be as successful as the barefoot boy with his can of worms. Because natural bait must be fished slowly and with care, a man has some time to reflect. He can hear the birds, see a flight of ducks winging overhead, marvel at a brilliantly colored dragonfly, and generally get to know and appreciate nature and all her moods. Yes, sir, there's more to bait fishing than meets the eye. Why not dig a can of worms and give it a try? This is Kurt Gowdy for Monitor Outdoors.
Now, a word about Zebco.
If you like the comforts of home while you're camping out, enter Zebco's American Outdoorsman Sweepstakes. The grand prize winner receives a Dreamer camper on a Ford pickup truck. You also get your choice of one of six hunting or fishing expeditions to the world's most exciting adventure spots. Hundreds of other prizes, and everyone wins a free copy of Zebco's American Outdoorsman Guide. Nothing to buy, just pick up your entry form where Zebco Redhead and Dryback sports products are sold.
Void where prohibited by law.
Monitor Outdoors with Kurt Gowdy is a regular feature every weekend.
Attention, please. Flight 3.
When the New York Airways copters first landed on the Pan Am building, only Astrid and Marty on the ground crew smoked L&M's. Now John Meehan's come over. When you've got today's best taste in smoking, people find out.
Come on over for the taste of it. Come on over to the L&M side.
When you've got today's best taste in smoking, people find out.
Tijuana taxi driven by Herb Alpert. This is Monitor 66. I'm Frank Blair in the driver's seat. Monitor reaches all America on NBC Radio in Florida's Golden Triangle. WFLA serves Tampa, St. Petersburg, and Clearwater and West Florida counties.
Monitor, your weekend companion on the NBC Radio Network.
Frank Blair here with Monitor 66 and Mel Allen. Mel, there's been a lot of talk lately about bringing the spitball back to baseball pitching. In fact, elsewhere on Monitor, former pitcher Jim Brosnan has a few words to say about that. How do you feel on that subject?
Well, I have to go along with the guys that throw it, and quite a lot of them do. In fact, if you'll notice closely, the catchers no longer wear a chest protector. They wear bibs when they go out to talk to the pitcher.
Thank you, Mel. We'll hear a roundup of today's sports a little later. Monitor Music with Matt Monroe.
As free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to each time you look at a star.
In a moment, Mal Allen with Today in Sports. Monitor Sports is brought to you by Plymouth Fury Belvedere Valiant Barracuda. Plymouth 66.
There goes another Plymouth.
There goes another Plymouth.
And chances are it's another Plymouth Fury Silver Special. Your Plymouth dealer sold so many Plymouth Fury Silver Specials in these past few weeks, he's going all out to make a great deal even better. He's having a Plymouth Fury Silver Special success sale.
There goes another Plymouth.
And offering the same special car at a special price in five beautiful colors, silver, white, or three shades of blue. Same big package of extras as standard equipment. White walls, deluxe upper door molding, special wheel covers, blue all-vinyl interior, all part of the deal. Plymouth Fury Silver Special Success Sale. Don't miss it at your Plymouth dealers now.
Plymouth,
a great car by Chrysler Corporation.
At the Monitor Sports Desk, Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Frank Blair. Hello there, everybody. Baseball, American League, three doubleheaders. The Yanks swept the Twins to achieve a winning streak of five. New York 5, Minnesota 3 in the opener. Stottlemyre beat Grant, Gibbs, and Pepitone homering for the Yankees. Second game, New York 2, Minnesota 1. Fritz Peterson and Jim Merritt, the pitchers of record. In the first game, Cleveland 3, Chicago 2, Sonny Siebert bested Ed Fisher. The Senators and Angels split a doubleheader. The first game, Washington 6, California 1. Pete Rickard beat Fred Newman. Rich Reichard and Joe Adcock homering for California. And the second game was California 2, Washington 1, Jim McLaughlin beating Jim Hannon. A game that snapped Washington's 5-game winning streak and California's 6-game losing streak. Boston beat Kansas City 5-1. 5 in a row for the Red Sox. Earl Wilson pitched a four-hitter to beat Ralph Terry. Dalton Jones homered for Boston. Detroit 3, Baltimore 2. Mickey Lolich the winner, Frank Britannia the loser. In the National League, 2 doubleheaders. In the opener, San Francisco shut out the New York Mets 5-0 on Juan Marichal's 3-hitter. Marichal's 3rd shutout. Larry Bernhardt, the loser, and Jim Hart hit the game's only homer. It was for the Giants, of course. First game, Atlanta 5, Chicago 2. Wade Blassingame beat Dick Ellsworth. Cubs manager Leo DeRocher got the heave-ho at the start of the fourth inning, something he's been working up to in this short season. St. Louis 4, Cincinnati 3, ending a 6-game Cincinnati winning streak. Gibson beat McCool. Home runs, Cepeda for the Cards, Pinson for the Reds. Philadelphia 6, Houston 1. Jim Bunning beat Barry Latman. Pittsburgh 4, Los Angeles nothing. A 5-hitter for Bob Veal. Claude Osteen the loser. Boxing. Headlines. Cassius Clay wants Doug Jones. Jose Torres wants Clay. Details. Fresh from his 6th-round TKO of Britisher Henry Cooper, Clay indicated today he'd like to fight Jones within the next 2 months, if the money is right, instead of German-European champion Carl Mildenberger, whom he mentioned in the ring the other day, or World Boxing Association champ Ernie Terrell, or Thad Spencer and Amos Johnson, both of Portland, Oregon. Clay beat Jones in a controversial bout in 1963, may have to wait until after Jones faces Terrell on June 28th. Torres, who defended his light heavyweight title against Wayne Thornton last night successfully, said he thought his chances against Clay would be good, better than against Thornton, but admitted his next bout probably would be a title defense against Roger Roos of Montana. Golf. Bruce Devlin of Australia won the Colonial at Fort Worth, Texas, picked up $22,000 by scoring a one-stroke victory over R.H. Sykes. Devlin shot a 75 for a 72-hole total of 280. Sykes came in with a 70 for 281. Al Geiberger and Tony Lima tied for third with 282. Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner Cowie King will come to New York Tuesday to prep for the June 4th Belmont Stakes and a shot at the Triple Crown. And that's the late sports news, Frank. Mel Allen here, friends, reminding you that for more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Thanks, Mel. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Hello, this is Jack Nicklaus on the PGA Golf Tour. May I ask you a question? Is your boy taking advantage of the tremendous scouting program here in New Orleans? If your boy is between 8 and 12, he should be. Take it from me, Jack Nicklaus. Scouting was an important part of my boyhood. To get full information on the scouting program here in New Orleans, call 522-6201. Thank you.
Tetanus infection, commonly called lockjaw, can result from even a scratch or an insect bite, but it is preventable through immunization. A series of inoculations can protect you and your family against this often fatal disease. The Louisiana State Medical Society recommends that you ask your doctor about tetanus protection. 16.5 minutes until 9 o'clock.
Now, Monitor visits Broadway. Len Probst, our man on Broadway, looks into the past, the present, and the future.
Last night was the beginning of one play on Broadway and the end of another. The curtain came down on a show that, when it arrived, had seemed doomed to quick failure. The play, the subject was Roses, was by an unknown author, Frank Gilroy. There were only 3 people in the cast, there was no ballyhoo, and the advance ticket sale was a meager $162. But this play, an honest slice of life about a soldier returning home, ran for 2 years and won a number of awards. The subject was Roses played 832 performances, which establishes it as one of the longest-running serious dramas on Broadway. The record holder is a comedy, Life with Father, with 3,224 performances. The new show, the one that opened last night, is A Time for Singing. It's based on the novel How Green Was My Valley, written in 1939 by Richard Llewellyn, and it's the story of life in his native Wales. Llewellyn, who now makes his home in São Paulo, Brazil, flew in from there to attend the opening. The stars in the musical are all British, including two-ton Tessie O'Shea, a music hall performer who comes from Wales but now makes her home in Massachusetts. I asked Miss O'Shea about the song she sings, which, like the name of the show, is called A Time for Singing.
Well, The Time for Singing is a waltz, which is my favorite, because if you remember, in The Girl Who Came to Supper, the big song was Saturday Night at the Rose and Crown is just the place to be. You remember, that was a beautiful waltz, which really just gets you going and going and going until the whole stage...
The Rose and Crown was a pub.
The Rose and Crown was an old pub, which the old girl, which I played, if you remember, the old flower seller in Piccadilly Circus, and also the woman who sold her fish and chips around the town. But what happened is Mr. Griffith remembers how green his valley was, and he goes to tell you the story around this family of the Morgans, of this Beth and Gwillem, who had these seven children. I have five grown-up children, a man, male. I have one daughter, Angharad, and I have a young son who's 8 years of age called Hugh, who, incidentally, is the most brilliant little actor I think I've ever seen in my life. He comes from Philadelphia, bless him, and he speaks with a Welsh accent, and the poor lad has never heard Welsh in his life. And you know, he's learned it by just listening to us speaking to him. He's marvelous. Anyhow, Beth, she's in this wedding, and the wedding is over, and suddenly she is elated about it all. And she gets up and she sings, "This is the time for singing. Sing out the joy that you feel inside. Sing out a smile that you cannot hide." And then she goes on to tell you the story. It's beautiful. The music in this show is definitely of the, what I call, higher standard of music. This is no sort of, "You gotta get me in the taxi, honey," nothing like that. This is beautiful music. Mm-hmm. This sort of flows, you know.
I spent a number of years in England. I saw a number of British musicals. The British, it seems to me, have never caught on to doing a musical the way Broadway does.
No.
Why not?
I wouldn't know. This is something that is in your blood. Over here, it was like films. You were the only people that could make musical films. We tried and tried, and we could not get it. You have a knack of putting something over.
I mean, My Fair Lady should have been done by an Englishman rather than by an American company, because, after all, it was George Bernard Shaw. It was an English story set in England. But yet, Americans always seem to come up with musicals.
Yes. Well, I don't know what it is. I'll tell you what I think it really is, dear. Not so much your stars, because I think our stars equal your stars. But where you shine, you have fantastic talent. In fact, nearly all of your people should be stars. This is what I really feel. I mean, now take the five boys in our show. I had an English producer and director come around in Boston when we opened, you know, a few weeks ago, before we came into New York. And he came to see the show, and he came around to me and he said, "Tessie, this show will be a sensation in England, but you must take those boys with you. We have nothing to equal them." Mm-hmm. These are what we call boys that don't get the money that a star gets, but has still got this fantastic quality. You have amazing quality in all your entertainers. Take your dancers, for instance. They can all sing, they can all dance, and they can all act.
Isn't there a feeling that if you're English, working in the theater, that you haven't really made it until you become a success in America?
No, I think that's an American concept, which isn't true. But as far as I'm concerned, I wanted to come to America, period. I mean, Broadway just happened to be... Well, everybody knows. I mean, I think every American star, every film person, anybody from Los Angeles even, no matter what, I don't think they feel they've made it unless they've really appeared on Broadway. Broadway is magic. It has a magic, a name, which is, it's something to have appeared on Broadway. I mean, we get half the money on Broadway to start off with, so it must be the magic of the name. It can't be for the money, that's for sure, because you'll make twice as much as you go to Las Vegas.
Tessie O'Shea, who opened on Broadway last night. Coming up next week, the last musical of the season. It's called MAME, M-A-M-E, and it's a musical adaptation of that hit play, Anti-MAME. The show opens Tuesday night with Angela Lansbury in the title role. This is Leonard Probst, NBC News, New York. That's it from Broadway.
Theaters ring around the world, a weekend series of close-ups of people and events from around the globe. In a moment, NBC News correspondent Stephen Nevis reports on the reaction of American peace groups to political events in Vietnam. That report brought to you by Bird and Son, makers of Bird windseal shingles for the protection of your home.
What is your roof's worst enemy, sun or storm? Hello there, Mel Allen here. You know, I've been talking to the people who make Bird windseal shingles. They've been in business for 171 years. They know roofs. They say the sun is your roof's worst enemy. The sun can bake the protective oils out of shingles. The sun can crack shingles, rot them, make them too weak to keep out wind and water. Now, is that true of all shingles? No, not Bird windseal shingles. They're made with double coatings for extra protection where the weather hits, and they seal themselves down with a special thermoplastic cement. Result? Bird windseal shingles stand up against baking sun, ripping wind, soaking rains. Bird windseal shingles can keep your roof tight and dry, even in a hurricane. Bird windseal shingles. Any roofer will be proud to put them on for you.
Now, here's NBC News correspondent Stephen Nevis reporting from Washington.
A Gallup poll completed before the South Vietnamese political situation took a further turn for the worse this week reported that support for President Johnson's policies in Vietnam had slipped below 50% of the American public. This happened once before last July, about the time Mr. Johnson ordered a substantial troop buildup in Vietnam to reverse what most agreed was the trend toward defeat. Most agreed at the time the president's loss of backing was largely due to public nervousness about the coming sacrifices. This time, the president's declining support seems to parallel the increasing inability of the South Vietnamese government, or ours, to stem the country's energy-sapping political strife. This latest Gallup poll sets the level of presidential support at 47%. Then there is the more or less constant 18% who have no opinion, leaving 35% in the disapproving category. Many here are quick to point out that this number is divided between those who think further escalation will produce victory and those who never approved of our involvement, think peace ought to be sought more aggressively, or that the time has come for us to withdraw from Vietnam. There is an inescapable impression that the ranks of those opposed to the president for any one of those latter reasons is growing. One may then wonder how much credit or blame for the phenomenon should be laid to the anti-Vietnam War movement. The avowed purpose of the anti-war movement has been to educate the American public, to make it aware that there's another side to the Vietnamese story. Sometimes that effort has taken the form of virulent anti-administration statements, sounding more like the propaganda of Radio Peking. But for the most part, the effort has been more patriotic. Most of the peace movement once relied heavily on the line that the United States has no business in Vietnam. Behind this was the argument that the succession of governments in Saigon since Ngo Dinh Diem have not had the support nor the respect of South Vietnam's people. This was an internal matter, claimed the peace movement. Now the anti-war organizations are actively supporting more than 40 congressional primary candidates for the fall contest, and nothing seems to moderate people like practical politics. More of the movement's leaders are saying it's becoming clear that an American-supported government in Vietnam, at least one not like the Khi regime or its immediate predecessors, can resolve South Vietnam's problems. How much effect the peace movement is having, no one can clearly say, but its pronouncements to many seem to have begun to make sense. This is Stephen Nevis, NBC News, Washington.
Ring Around the World monitors weekend series of close-ups of people and events here and abroad. Music by George Martin, part of Weekend Entertainment on Monitor 66. I'm Frank Blair. Monitor News on the Hour is just ahead.
This is Chet Huntley. Merrill Muller, Bill Cullen, Frank Blair, and I are heard each weekday on Emphasis on NBC Radio.